Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Of our show, we'll hear from Jana Leggett, president of the Ontario chapter of the International Dyslexia Association. So tell me a little bit about the Ontario chapter of the International Dyslexia Association.
Well, ONVIDA, or the Ontario branch of IDA, was officially incorporated as a charity and a nonprofit in 2004. And basically what we do, we we promote literacy through research, education, and advocacy. We provide the public with information. Our main goal is to let the public know what dyslexia is, because dyslexia is often clouded in a lot of myths, as well as a lot of misunderstandings. The term dyslexia is not often used in Canada as much as it is used in the States. So we really want to let the public know what dyslexia or a specific learning disability in the area of reading is. And the other component of that is how to identify it early, and then how to treat it or how to intervene so that these children, who typically have average intelligence, just struggle with learning to read, can access the curriculum and thus complete school successfully and go on to have a successful career.
So, can you take me through some of the myths that the organization tries to dispel?
Okay. Well, first of all, just the meaning of dyslexia. So, dyslexia in Ontario is not as widely used because when children have a learning difficulty, a psychologist will evaluate that child. And what a psychologist does is they look at the strengths and needs. So they evaluate the cognitive processes, how the child thinks verbally and non-verbally, as well as how their memory functions and attention functions. And in addition, they look at how that ability compares to academics. So what they're looking at specific areas of difficulty. And when a child has a language-based difficulty in the area of phonemic awareness, which is that understanding that language can be broken down into individual sounds, and then the sounds can be joined back together to create syllables, words, and so on. In addition to having some difficulties in the area of working memory, then that constitutes a specific learning disability. That means that the child in the area of reading, so the child's going to have a hard time learning to put sounds together, map the letters, the symbols, onto their sounds to begin to read words accurately and fluently. When that happens, when you're having difficulty reading words accurately and fluently, your cognitive processes are constantly taxed. You're working to read the words, but you don't have the potential, the cognitive energy or ability to actually put the ideas together to make sense of what you're reading to achieve reading comprehension. A lot of times, dyslexia, the term dyslexia, is confused and believed to be a visual disorder. It actually is not. It is a language-based difficulty. So ONVIDA really works hard to help teachers, professionals, parents understand that dyslexia or a reading difficulty is language-based, it is not visual-based, and that the treatments or intervention need to address language-based issues. So that's one big myth. that we really struggle and really want everybody to understand.
So how do you go about working with that? How do you educate someone with this condition?
Okay, so the early warning signs are actually there quite early on. What happens is because dyslexia or reading difficulty is based in language, what happens is children often have delays in language development. So they may not be speaking. Typically, children begin to talk, use single words at the 1 year mark or so. Then by 2 years of age, they begin to combine words into phrases when they're communicating with their mom and dad, when they're playing with their friends. So you see a steady progression of language. And by 3 years of age, children are able to communicate full sentences, share their opinions, comments, and so on. Some children with dyslexia or reading difficulties have delays. They may not begin to communicate in single words until 2 or 3 years of age. Or they actually may have difficulty with joining the words to begin to build sentences. So that is one area of difficulty. The other thing is that children may also have difficulty producing sounds. So when they're learning to produce the S sound, how to just articulate it, or any sound in the English language or in any language, they may have articulation difficulties. So they don't know how to place their tongues properly to produce the sound. There's difficulty with auditory discrimination. They may hear the sound, but they're not producing it properly. The other thing, as soon as children enter the school system in junior kindergarten, children are constantly exposed to letters. And our kids who have difficulty with reading, have a really hard time picking up the correspondence between the letter name and the sound it makes. They also confuse numbers, so that they may have difficulty recognizing the symbol for 5 as a number 5. They understand the concept, but they have difficulty matching the visual symbol to the auditory symbol. The other most important aspect is called phonemic awareness. And this is the ability, I've already kind of talked about it. We know that language is made up of units. As I'm speaking to you, sentences are made up of words, words are made of syllables, syllables are made of sounds. And that, to us as literate adults, makes perfect sense. However, children with learning disabilities in the area of reading have a hard time parsing language, especially at the level of syllables, and then breaking the syllables down further into sounds. And this is a key and identifying factor in learning disabilities in the area of reading. Children have difficulty segmenting and blending the sounds of language. So that directly impacts your ability to read words and spell words as well. The other part, some children may have difficulty with how quickly they're able to retrieve and pull information from their mind to use it. So when I see letters on the page, I quickly associate those letters to sounds, blend those sounds together, come up with words, and continue to read through to the end of the page. And at the same time, I'm asking my background knowledge, I'm making predictions, and I'm actually reading for comprehension. A lot of our children, when they're young, even though if they do learn the letter sound correspondence, the process of pulling that information from the brain could be quite slow. And that, again, that impedes their fluency of reading and their automaticity, which impacts their reading comprehension. So, going to your intervention piece, we know we can identify kids early. Intervention must be evidence-based. That means 30 years of reading research has shown us and told us that we do need to teach these children explicitly. They need to learn and hear the sounds and have a lot of practice mapping what they hear to the print, then sounding out the words, learning to blend the sounds together into words, and repeated practice in a systematic and explicit manner. And we know that the earlier we can catch a child, the more able we're able to help them along, and they're more successful later on. So early identification and early intervention are absolutely key.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay.
Jana also asked that the show include details of how to find the International Dyslexia Association online. You can check out their website at www.idaontario.com, or you can follow them on Twitter at OnBida. It's all caps, folks. Truth is, in this day and age, there are a lot of myths and rumors surrounding any given condition. With all the information that's freely available to us as a society, it's hard to know what's right, what's wrong. I maintain the best thing to do is to speak to someone knowledgeable in the field, preferably a doctor familiar with a condition. Sometimes, folks, knowing what a condition can mean is when we start to put up our own roadblocks. Say, something's not worth trying because I would not be able to do this. Not so. It's not something we should be doing. Because a person with a disability, regardless of the condition, brings their own strength, their own set of circumstances to it. Having guidelines, baselines for what a condition means is important. What's most important is to look at it on an individual case, I think. To recognize that a person may respond to this treatment or this therapy in one way, whereas somebody else might have responded another. If you look at the individual skill sets, you'll gain a more complete picture. It's most important to look into it. If a doctor says they don't have all the facts, keep going. Try to find the answers you seek. Don't be afraid to ask questions, to stand alongside organizations such as OnBida. They are here to help, just to make things that much better for individuals with disabilities. Taking that first step, asking for help, can sometimes be the most difficult part of the journey. Once you've made it, things really do become so much clearer. You start to realize you're not facing your condition on your own. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Hi, my name is Brent Hawks. I'm the senior pastor of the Metropolitan Community Church of Toronto. I'm gay by God and proud by choice. And I'd like to ask you a special favor. Being young and lesbian or gay isn't easy. If you are a teacher, parent, community center volunteer, coach, or other youth mentor, you can help. Please put up a poster for the Lesbian Gay by Youth Line. They are a toll-free peer support phone line in Ontario. They provide confidential peer support and referrals to community organizations. For more information, visit their website at www.youthline.ca or look in the phone book under Lesbian, Gay, or Bisexual.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handicapable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Jana Leggett from the International Dyslexia Association. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Meg O'Connell, Managing Partner for Global Disability Inclusion. Tell me a little bit about Global Disability Inclusion.
Well, we are a boutique consulting firm, which means we are singularly focused on disability inclusion. We have a three-pronged approach in working with companies in the workplace, the workforce, and the marketplace. So we really want to help companies view people with disabilities as a viable part of their talent pool, as well as a consumer market that they should be paying attention to as well.
So, can you take me through the approach you mentioned?
Well, what we do is we try to help companies realize that working with the disability community as part of your talent solution, as well as if you have products and services you should be marketing to them, we really try to turn the lens of not as a group to feel sorry for or a charity model, but a powerful market segment and a additional diversity segment that you should be including in your workforce. So we have what we have called the evolution of disability competitiveness, and it has five key stages, and we really work with companies wherever they are in those stages in helping them design programs that will help them be more inclusive to people with disabilities.
So what sorts of methods do you use to dispel the myths surrounding disabilities?
Oh gosh, we've got several. We of course do a lot of training with hiring managers and recruiters, and just some general awareness and sensitivity around disability and disability types, and helping them understand that, you know, bottom line, it's not about the disability; it's about what the person can do, not what you can't do. So we do spend a lot of time doing training. We also have some great data that has come out over the last couple of years from companies who have been employing people with disabilities very successfully and have shown that 90% of people with disabilities perform on par or better than their non-disabled colleagues. They have 48% greater tenure. You know, they stay on the job longer, and all of these things are data that really demonstrates that hiring people with disabilities is good for business.
So, are there any challenges in this work?
Oh gosh, there are a ton of challenges in this work. Most significantly, I think, are the attitudinal barriers that, you know, we have not particularly been very nice to individuals with disabilities. They're a group not to be seen or talked about, and, you know, people often think disability means less than or not able to contribute. So it's really dispelling that myth that people with disabilities have as much to contribute as everyone else. So they should be part of our workplace, they should be part of our community, they should be part of advertising and marketing campaigns. People with disabilities represent a $225 billion in discretionary spending in the U.S. alone. So, you know, they're buying cars and makeup and clothes and shoes and everything else, but often they're not portrayed in advertising or marketing campaigns.
So, in your time working with Global Disability Inclusion, is there any one success moment that stands out for you?
Any one success moment? Gosh, we've had a few, and I think for us, it's really what we have been facing recently in the U.S. are some new regulations that are impacting companies to set goals for hiring people with disabilities. And the greatest success moment that I have is when I'm talking to a client and the light bulb goes off. You can almost see it over their head. They understand that it's not about compliance. It's about doing things that are good for your business and incorporating and including people with disabilities in that. It's when they, at that moment when they understand that we're not talking about charity, we're not talking about less than, we're talking about finding qualified people with disabilities to perform your jobs and helping them really see the market opportunities that are out there in advertising to people with disabilities.
So what type of disability do you most commonly see in this work?
It's cross-disability. We don't target any one specific disability group or disability type. So we have helped people with Down syndrome get work. We've helped people on the autism spectrum disorder. We've helped people with epilepsy or cerebral palsy. It really runs the gamut. So it's about can you do the job, and are you qualified for the job? And that's really what we try to focus on, because at the end of the day, it's not really about the disability. It's whether or not you can do the job and perform well with an employer.
So, if you could send any one message about the need to include individuals with disabilities, what might it be?
Don't prejudge. I hear a lot from employers, or we get the question, what kind of jobs can people with disabilities do? And I often chuckle and say, that's like asking me what kind of job can a woman do? We thankfully are past that stage in our diversity journey, that people realize women are contributing to the workforce. But it's really not prejudging and not making assumptions about a disability or disability type around what someone can and can't do. So just being open and focusing on someone's abilities and not their disability.
So what you were saying brought to mind the idea that you can't ask what a person with a disability can do, because that really does vary based on the individual, their skill set, their background, their capabilities. Any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think that's right. It's about what someone can do, and we get questions from employers all the time that say, well, what about this job? What about that job? And again, I really encourage people not to prejudge, because just when you think that someone with one type of disability may not be able to do that job, I have been proven wrong. So I don't like to say no, and I like to say, let's see what the person can do. Let's see if they can do this job. Let's maybe get them an internship. Where do we start so they can really prove themselves? Are there, can we bring them on as a temporary employee? And, many companies use that as a leverage point for bringing in new people all the time. So why not do the same with people with disabilities? So let's open the doors and see what people with disabilities can do, and not rule those opportunities out before they even have a chance to prove themselves.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay.
So organizations like Global Disability Inclusion, I've got a lot of respect for, in so much as they recognize there's potential in everyone, regardless of their disability, regardless of their circumstances. There is the potential and the capability to join the workforce, to add something. But really, it does come down to a matter of who the person is, their skill sets, their interests, their hopes, their dreams. The fact is, if a person's interested in an area of work, odds are they'll be more likely to put their heart and soul into it. But hearing the stats on disability employment retention, it's really an encouraging thing. It says not only do the individuals themselves have a heart for this work, but it says the employers have seen that they are contributing and that it's meaningful. It's not just busy work. It's not just, we'll give you this because we feel sorry for you and feel that legally we have to include people with disabilities. It's not how it works, folks. The first step is recognizing that there is capability, there is potential. If you're someone with a story of disability life, write HandyLink 4, HandyLink, the number 4, gmail.com. Always love to hear from you folks at home. When it comes to workplace accommodations, it's true there can be a certain measure of fear on the part of an employer. They might say, this could be prohibitive, this could be difficult to implement. But after all the employers and employees I've spoken to, you realize very quickly that usually the accommodations are the simple things. Modified work schedule, little extra time to get ready, a ramp so that a person in a wheelchair can get around. But asking the questions, doing periodic satisfaction checks in this, would solve a lot of the problems before they ever happened. Ask both the workers with disabilities and their able-bodied counterparts. Are we doing all that we could? And if not, what could we add? And if it seems difficult on the surface, do some research. Come up with a plan. Ask, is it really as impossible as it seems? 9 times out of 10, you might find a solution in this way, just by going beyond the obvious, beyond the surface. Not saying to yourself, this person's condition equals this, this, and this. Ask the question, what does this person bring to the job? What can I learn from them as an employer? What can they do just to make the work setting that much better? The earlier interview in the show with Jana brought to mind that there can be myths and misconceptions surrounding any given disability. Hearing about dyslexia was a great example, I think, in so much as people know that it's a condition. But how many of us know what it means and what we can do about it? There are usually steps that can be taken, if not to find an immediate cure for a situation, to make progress. I mean, taking some of the weight off a condition, saying it's not as hopeless as it seems, taking steps just to improve the quality of life can make all the difference. One of the show's great friends, Nicole Daigneault, has talked about her yoga program for exceptional people, and on many occasions she said the pain reduction that they experienced through her program was life-changing. For the very first time, these people were living without pain. They were living just a better quality of life because of this one thing. Disability should never be allowed to rule over who a person is. Yes, it's a very important aspect who a person is and what they are capable of in the world, but it is not the defining aspect. It's not to say, you can't walk, so you can't do this, this, and this. Disability really is, just like all life is, the unknown potential. You start off in this world as a set of basic responses, but you grow as a person, shaped by experience. Disability life can shape a person's experiences in many ways. It can teach them to try new things, to venture beyond themselves, or can teach them to put up their own roadblocks, to say, it's not worth trying, nobody with a disability has ever succeeded at this, and I'm not going to be the one to step outside the box and try it. If everyone took that attitude, nothing would ever be accomplished. Just takes one person within the disability community, or in any group really, to take that step and say, we as a society can do better. We can make progress. And that's the key, to keep moving forward. Never, ever to say, we've done this for individuals with disabilities, and it's good enough. Not to look at the potential of what can be done in the future. The policies, the guidelines we're establishing here and now, years from now, people are going to look and say, that's it? That's all you did? We don't know everything that will become of the world as yet, but disability is never hopeless. It's never something to be treated as an insurmountable set of circumstances. A person with a disability is just as strong and capable as anyone else in society. So goes the credo, I can do anything you can, it's just a question of how. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. You've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.